Welcome to Technogram by Redington, Redington's podcast channel where we bring forward untold stories that are shaping the world of technology. I'm your host, Janice, and today we have someone very special with us, Raza Sayed. So I met Raza at one of our events recently, and I think it was the
Qasim
Suhoor.
Suhoor,
right.
Correct.
So it was one of those conversations that stayed with me because of the passion and the clarity and the vision that he spoke with. I knew right then that I had to bring him as a guest on Technogram and hear his story. So we'll dive into his journey and understand what it takes to build something meaningful in this fast-moving industry. Welcome, Raza. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Janice. Really appreciate the invite. Delighted to be here with you.
I'd like to start off by asking you to introduce yourself beyond the technicalities of your designation or the company that you're from.
Sure. So I would say I come from a very sort of a humble background. I have been very, very fortunate and lucky in many ways. I had the opportunity to be independent at a very young age. At the age of 16, I had my first job as a receptionist at a computer company.
Okay.
At the age of 19, I was unloading and loading pallets at a dock. At a departmental store in the U.S.
That's interesting.
I was pumping gas, cleaning toilets.
Oh, wow.
That's where I started. And as I was doing that, I was part-time going to the school as well, and I finished my education. I'm really thankful to my family, to my parents, for the values that they instilled in me, which was to remain grounded. Always remain grounded and stay humble, no matter where you are and what you do. And those values have really stuck with me forever. And that's kind of how I operate. And the journey has been very, very interesting for me, as I said. So that's kind of where I started. At the age of 23, I had my first, I would say, formal, proper, professional job as a technical support engineer at a company in the U.S. Corner Peripherals in the Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And then the journey started there, and then here I am today.
That's
and I've done a number of different things, really, really enjoyed my journey over the last, I would say, almost 30 years. So started off in tech support and then got into the field as an application engineer, field engineer. Once I had the field experience, I got into technical marketing at Sun Microsystems. I spent time with many of these big names that I so recall so fondly. And then, just continued on. So technical marketing, then I got into product marketing, product management I did. I spent some time with Veritas Software.
Okay.
That was a big company of the late 90s and early 2000s. Went to a company by the name of Mercury Interactive, which was actually acquired by HPE.
Okay.
Eventually. And then I ended up with EMC in 2006.
And the rest is history.
And then the rest is history, literally,
So you were with Dell for how many years?
Oh, gosh. I spent nearly 19 years, just 1 month shy of 19 years. That's been an incredible ride with EMC / Dell because, as I said, I joined EMC in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And then EMC merged with Dell in 2016, and we became Dell EMC and then Dell Technologies.
Yes.
I've been just so blessed and fortunate to do so many different things over the last 19 years that I spent with Dell Technologies. My last role was leading the AI business for the Central and Eastern Europe, Middle East, Turkey, and Africa. And prior to that, I spent about 4 years leading the VMware business at Dell Technologies. So I was very fortunate again to take over a business when it was about $140 million and grow the business from $140 to about $358 million by the time I handed over back to the company.
Okay.
And prior to that, I spent time with running the Pivotal business for some time as well. And a number of different things. I've done sales strategy and planning for the region. I've been in the role of field CTO. It's been an amazing journey, honestly.
Okay. So that was a nice walk down the memory lane.
Yeah, absolutely.
So coming back to the present,
yes.
What is this all about? And what is the role that you play?
So let's say a next generation generative AI solutions provider, where our goal and objective in life is to make all the ecosystem, technology ecosystem, profitable and successful, basically. And I'll expand more on that.
Yeah.
Technology is an enabler for everyone who is involved in this IT supply chain,
mm-hmm.
from vendors to distributors to resellers, and to, in fact, in that supply chain, I would say our main stakeholder, the customer,
right.
Goal is to make everyone successful, everyone a winner in this.
So you work with other partners as well?
I do.
Okay.
I do. We do. We work with, as I said, see, the thing with AI, everyone recognizes, is that there's no one single company or vendor who's going to do it
all
yes. by themselves. So you have to have a mindset of being collaborative,
mm-hmm.
being open, and bring value to everyone. That's the end game. So you have to build this ecosystem, of partnerships, right? This is what everyone's doing. NVIDIA is doing this. Dell is doing the same. HP is doing. Name anyone, and you'll see that everyone has built this ecosystem. So that's kind of how it works, right? And this is our philosophy as well, is that, we're going to make everyone a winner. Our win relies on the win of everyone else. If we make everyone else successful in this ecosystem, by default, we'll be successful.
Okay.
So we work very, very closely. As I said, our objective is, to help organizations, monetize and optimize with the power of Gen AI, and then everything that they need in that journey to achieve that goal and objective, we enable everyone along the way.
Okay.
That's what we do.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. And I have a couple of questions regarding AI, which
sure.
we'll come to later.
Mm.
Can you first kind of explain what sparked the idea?
Yeah,
what is
right.
the story?
What we find is that you have some stakeholders here, right? Mm-hmm. You have customer on one end.
Yeah.
They clearly understand that they have to capitalize on this next-gen technology. However, they're kind of looking for help, if you
so
will.
So that's
right?
the gap that you identified that there are.
So that's one aspect of
okay.
it, right? So customer is, so the way we look at it is there's customer on one end and there are vendors on the other end,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's a wide space and gap in between.
Mm-hmm.
So customers, as I mentioned, has an objective of, getting value out of this technology. So they're looking for help. They're asking for, help me figure out my AI strategy.
Okay.
Where should I start? What should I do? What would be a good use case for it? And how can I quickly, deliver value back to the business?
Right.
Right.
I think when you say AI strategy, it sounds really heavy and overwhelming. So that's probably when you can kind of come in and say
100%
what exactly they can do.
Yes. So we provide, if you look at our offerings, we provide consultancy,
mm-hmm.
and there are different sorts of consultancy, types of consultancies that we provide. So one is helping organization build their strategy, right? The next is use case ideation, for instance, right? And then we provide this entire journey, right? Once we have a strategy in place, a use case identified, then the next step, obviously in that journey, is to do a minimum viable product, per se, a proof of concept, if you will, of a single use case,
okay.
and show its value to the customer, right? And for them to be able to show that value back to the business, and then roll it out into production.
Yeah.
But there are a number of different things that need to happen to do all of that. Once
right.
you have figured out the strategy and the use case, right? The very first thing, Janice, that you would need is to figure out, do I have the data for the use case that we have identified? And typically what you would find is that there is a whole exercise that you would have to go through to identify the data,
mm-hmm.
to bring the data, to get the data prepared, cleanse the data, a whole set of activities that you need to figure out. So a set of data services that we bring to to the table. Once you have sorted that, then comes the question of, okay, we need to deploy the AI infrastructure. But before we deploy the AI infrastructure, we need to size the AI infrastructure, right? So the server, the network, the storage, what type of GPUs we need. As you know, we have some special situation in our region, you know, with the GPU restrictions. Yeah. So how we work around those, you know, what would make the most sense? You saw what DeepSeek has done, right? Yes. That really has helped the world, actually. Mm. So that really helps us take the technology forward to the customer, right? It really eases the burden on everyone in the supply chain, if you will, the vendors, the customer, and the solution providers, because we have something available that works really well and scales really well. So it's sort of, you know, short circuits the whole, you know, waiting game that many of the organizations have been stuck in that scenario because of these sort of the technology restrictions that we have in the region. So we provide those services, you know, the infrastructure identification and sizing services, and then obviously the deployment of that infrastructure, preparation. And these are all what I call preparations for the real action, right? The real action starts after that, right? That's really when you get into the AI software layer. You know, this is kind of where you start playing around with large language models and different MLOps tools and AIOps tools, the whole AI layer, right? And then on top of that, obviously, sits the use case with an application in front of it so that you and I can consume that. So we're providing that entire journey to the customer from conceptualizing, building the strategy, use case ideation, MVPs, to data management, to infrastructure management, deployment, all of that, to AI actual use case deployment with the application. And that's really our value proposition. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Raza, let me stop you right there for a couple of minutes. I have some stats here for AI, and I want to read them out and then hear your thoughts on it. So, there are 34 million AI-generated images being created daily. 71% of social media images are now AI-generated. And this is from a generative AI point of view.
Yes.
And then we have other things like multimodal AI and AI agents. So, AI agents point of view, there are 25% of enterprises who will deploy AI agents this year from an international perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But we also see an adoption gap where 81% of workers are still not using AI tools.
Yes.
And I think this is more reflective of the US markets. And when we come down to the Middle East, according to PwC, is expected to accrue 2% of the total global benefits of AI in 2030.
Yeah.
And just to add on to that, from a Middle East perspective, Middle East and Africa perspective, we do our own research called QIntel.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, we have done this exercise where through our events, we've spoken to the top CIOs across key verticals and asked them these relevant questions about, you know, what do they think, what are their priorities and what are the technologies that they're betting on. So one of the interesting findings that we had was 47% of organizations are focusing on internal adoption of AI.
100%.
And this is mostly
100%.
This is mostly with AI-driven employee productivity tools or internal automation
processes.
Absolutely. So my question really is, when you actually go and talk to the customers, what are the demands that they are coming to you with? What kind of use cases are they thinking of?
Yeah.
And just your general thoughts on these things.
So fantastic. So thank you for sharing. Absolutely down the path of what we see, right? So two things that customers are looking for, and there is a certain order to it as well, as I think I mentioned this earlier. At the end of the day, an organization is looking to figure out how can I optimize my existing business. How do I bring about efficiency in my existing business so I can reduce cost of my existing business with generative AI? And how can I monetize generative AI? Meaning, how can I bring about new products and offerings and solutions that I can sell to the market? And there's almost a trend that we see that, and it kind of logically makes sense that, you know, before you bring about new products and services, a more immediate low-hanging fruit, as we say, is to see, and this is also a way to validate the viability of this technology, is to implement in-house. Mm-hmm. You know, eat your own dog food, as they say, right? Try it out in-house and see how this impacts the business.
Right.
And organizations are beginning to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So what we find is, most of the organizations, now there's some more established organizations, especially in, I'm talking about in North America or EMEA, Europe, you would find some of the bigger organizations, the likes of, BMW or Mercedes, and if you look at some of those companies, they're quite advanced, right? Already, they're power users of generative AI solutions, so digital twins and those sorts of things, really advanced users, right? But if you look at majority of the enterprises, they're still in early days. If you look at the telcos, the banks, right? They're still sort of trying to figure things out. So they're building their own lab environments to get things started, get familiar with the technology, get their people trained, because yes, the biggest thing that we find today, it's the most valuable thing in this entire thing, are the Gen AI skills and expertise. Mm-hmm. There's a major scarce, I would say, of those.
When you say Gen AI skills and expertise, are you able to elaborate down a bit more? What exactly are those skills?
Yeah, so look, the knowledge and know-how of generative AI beyond ChatGPT.
Right.
Beyond just under the hood.
Right. Beyond just being a prompt engineer.
Exactly. Yeah. Or that's the first thing, right? You have to be familiar with the technology as a user.
Yeah.
But really, how do you implement this technology? Being able to understand what are the different components that sit underneath the large language models, the different tools. I mean, believe me, there are almost hundreds and thousands of tools that are popping up every other day, right? So being able to get familiar with those tools, how they implement within your environment, what are the right set of tools, like things like LangChain, for example, that you would use, things like PyTorch, things like the large language models that we talk about, the Llama, and there are thousands of them, right? So there's a very limited handful of resources in the market who actually understand this technology under the hood, mm-hmm. right? That's what's in shortage. And then even if you bring it up to sort of a high level, if you look at management of many of these organizations, they are also trying to get their minds around the business aspect of it, right? The business value of it. So we get requests, for example, from customers where they say, do a week-long crash course on AI and Gen AI for our management,
right?
For our leadership, sure. Right? So we're going to bring all the general managers of the different lines of businesses in the room. We have done that actually, right? Where just get them oriented with the idea of AI and Gen AI and what it is, and the ethical AI, and the basic constructs of which are really important, mm-hmm. so that they can start thinking along those lines of, okay, this is here, mm-hmm. This is something that we need to adapt to, and work with.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we see.
So is there anything that the from a regional perspective, is there anything that the companies are not thinking of or getting it wrong when it comes to AI?
Look, everyone's going to get at some point something wrong, right? There is no a straight path. Mm-hmm. Even for us, we're going to get something wrong. But the question really is, it's a good thing to be wrong at times, right? It's a good thing to fail, because you learn from your failures.
Sure.
You're not going to learn from your successes. Success on a sequential or linear path is very dangerous, because you're not learning anything. So the idea is, get it wrong, that's okay. Fail, But you really need to recover from it fast. So as they say, fail, but fail fast, mm-hmm. right? And that's our philosophy as well. You know, fail, fail fast. Change the course, adjust the course, you know? And that's what we expect customers to go through. And this is what we see.
Raza, you're talking about the different layers, right? You spoke about the solution, the software layer, that's where it gets really interesting and everything. Yeah. And I'm sure there are other layers to it.
100%, absolutely. So as I mentioned, I started off talking about the AI infrastructure. And I mentioned briefly about, GPUs and the different sorts of GPUs. One very important thing that we sometimes, I wouldn't say overlook, but kind of goes in the background a little bit, is the sort of the environment aspect of it, right? And sort of the data centers of the future, what we call the AI factories, because, you know, moving forward, the power profile, for instance, is going to radically evolve and change. Mm-hmm. You know, if you...
That's interesting, because I read something this morning and it was all about how AI is going to demand a lot more energy, a lot
very
more power.
Much,
so how
much.
Does that then?
So I'm going to share some stats with you. And these are actual specs of GPUs, NVIDIA, right? So, and you'll see how quickly things are evolving and the relative impact on global economic and power consumption. So if you look at the thermal design power, TDP, for an H100 Hopper, GPU from NVIDIA, it can range anywhere from 300 watts to 700 watts, depending upon the architecture. If it's PCIe, 300 watts, SXM, 700 watts. Now, the next generation, it goes from 700 to 1400 with B300, the Blackwell Ultra, right? And the following generation, which is what NVIDIA are delivering right now, is the GB, the Grace Blackwell GPU, the GB200. A single GB200. So Blackwell is, I said 1400, right? Grace Blackwell, a single GPU consumes 2,700 watts.
2,700. That is unbelievable.
Watts. One single GPU, GB200. Now, what we have today is a GB NVL72. What that means, in a single rack, you have 72 GPUs.
In a single rack.
And in that single rack of Grace Blackwell consumes 140 kilowatts of power.
So in a world where we're talking about sustainability and tech sustainability, how does this feature?
Well, I want to draw some parallels on the impact of this, right? So a single rack of GB200, NVL72, 140 kilowatts. You stack seven of these racks together and you get a gigawatt of power, right? Guess how much of, so seven racks, one gig, 14 racks, 2 gigawatts of power. Now, just imagine how much of power a metropolitan city like Los Angeles or Chicago uses in a year.
At the moment.
It's powered by 2.3 to 2.8 gigawatts.
So for the whole city.
For the whole city. And we're talking about a city. I'm not talking about the greater Los Angeles. I'm talking about the city of Los Angeles, which is approximately about 4 million people.
Right.
They consume, power somewhere in the range of 2.3 to 2.8 gigawatts in a year.
In a year.
Which 14 of these GB200 NVL72 racks consume. Now, here is the economic and financial aspect of it, right? So it takes about $45 billion for 1 gigawatt of power, right? Today, the global data centers are consuming about 60 gigawatts. In the next 5 years, it is expected that that number from 60 gigawatts will go to somewhere in the range of 400 to 500 gigawatt. Now, put all of that in perspective, right? It takes 2.3 to 2.8 to power up a city like Los Angeles. For a year, right? And here we're talking about consuming close to 500 gigawatts in the next 5 years, just the data centers alone, the AI factories alone. So obviously, we need to think about the environmental aspect of it as well, right?
A
and by
more,
the way,
yeah.
This is only doubling. The latest, GTC, if you attended that, you know, this number of 72, the next generation of NVIDIA is going to double that number. They're taking switches out of that rack, separating those, and now you have a more dense environment of GPUs where you could stack up to 144 GPUs. So just imagine. So this is one aspect that we need to kind of, as a community, IT community, figure out.
I think a lot more conversations and actions are required.
Absolutely. The technology around power cooling is changing. So we're coming from a world of air-cooled data centers to now we're talking about, you know, liquid cooled, direct liquid cooling, immersive liquid cooling. You know, so there are many other solutions that are being looked at and being introduced by these vendors as well to manage what we have at hand.
Right.
So that's another aspect of AI that needs formal addressing. And by the way, in that, we do provide consultancy for that as well.
Yeah.
So data center, strategy and designing, those sorts of things. We work with our partners who actually deliver and implement these data centers. We personally don't do that. As I said, our strategy is to make everyone in the ecosystem successful.
Yeah.
You know, we set things up for them and then let them have a piece of it.
So what do you think could be some of the challenges that could happen in this space?
So look, it's a loaded question. I guess there are challenges in every dimension of it, right? As a founder, there's a challenge, a mental challenge to make that first jump into it, right? We're as I mentioned, I've been with Dell for 19 years, continue on with that journey, but there's something much bigger that you see that interests you.
Yeah.
And you take that leap of faith and you believe in yourself and you say, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is going to happen. So as an entrepreneur, you need to have a very thick skin,
mm-hmm.
and really solid belief in your own self. So you have to back yourself, right? Because people are going to be skeptical around you. So it's that mental challenge that most people struggle with, right? Making that shift. But once you get into it, I like this quote, and I'm going to paraphrase this.
Sure.
It's from Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when you are a founder of a business and you have a vision and you have a strategy and you believe in yourself, you have to be flexibly stubborn. Right? And this is a very meaningful expression from Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
Flexibly stubborn,
mm-hmm.
meaning you need to have the flexibility to adjust the course along the way.
When needed,
but you really have to be stubborn about your end goal, where you want to be. You know, you cannot take your eyes off of that end goal. And the end goal, in my mind, is I need to help customers benefit from Gen AI, and I want to make everyone in this journey successful and profitable. How do I do that? If I need to adjust the course, which we do all the time, we start off with one thought and then turns out, okay, we need to make some adjustment here.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose to go down that path,
right.
But would that be the right thing to do?
Mm.
You have to be very objective. You cannot be emotionally connected to an idea or a thought,
right.
As an entrepreneur in any business.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure it's going to be interesting for
very
you,
interesting.
Especially because the space is so dynamic.
Yes.
And there's something new happening every other day, and it'll be challenging as well as exciting for you to be on the game.
Yes.
So I don't know if you have any strategy or principles that you'd like to share with us on how you plan to do that.
So look, what we have learned being in this corporate world is that no matter how big or small you are,
mm-hmm.
you really got to be very structured. And as structured as possible in a startup where you're scrambling, you're doing everything yourself, you're a small team of people, be productive, be efficient, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our philosophy is be disciplined, be structured as much as possible, you know, think big. As they say, think globally, act locally, right?
Right.
So have that confidence and the mindset of being a you know, a value-adding organization. But yet, having said that, stay humble, stay grounded.
Yeah. Wonderful. Before I let you go, Raza, can you tell us, I think personally and professionally, you have been associated with Redington for a very long time.
Yes.
So do you remember any anecdotes or any stories that you can tell us about our partnership with you?
Yeah. So I have known Redington for ages, right? And in fact, we have done a lot of work together during my Dell days when I was running this AI business and even when I...
Do you remember the first person you spoke to as part of Redington?
Gosh, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
And I don't even know if they're still around. But I mean, as of recent, you know, obviously the discussions that we have with Redington around what we can do together from an AI perspective, you know, how we can collaborate and bring value to Redington, to its partners, to the vendors. We're really excited about what we're going to do together very, very soon in the near future. So we were talking to Javier and Savio and many of the other folks.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do together, and we're going to do it.
Raza, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story and your vision with us.
It's been such
an inspiring conversation.
You bet. It's been a pleasure being here. Appreciate the opportunity and really looking forward to working together with Redington.
Same here. And for everyone listening, if you've enjoyed this episode of Technogramma Redington, be sure to follow us and maybe leave us a review, as well as share the episode with anyone else who needs to listen to this story. We'll be back soon with more such untold stories from the tech world. And until then, keep exploring beyond the possible.